Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Brett Nelson. I'm counsel for Richard Darstead, trustee for the bankruptcy estate of Christoph Chalamuniak. This case arises under the Family and Medical Leave Act, and in particular, this case presents questions of whether an employer has an obligation to address factual questions with an employee's medical certification at the time that it's presented. The employer does have that obligation, whether the court views it as a question of sufficiency or validity. Then this case should be remanded, judgment should be entered on liability in favor of the estate, and the case should proceed forward with the trial on damages. If the employer does not have that obligation, the case should be remanded for determination of a question of material fact, which is what dates was Mr. Chalamuniak being treated? Was he receiving treatment on July 31st, August 2nd, or August 3rd?
Is there any debate about what actually happened, or... Or is the debate simply about the characterization of what happened as whether it constituted treatment or not?
Because the employer didn't address the requirements of the Act to establish the facts at the time that the certification was presented, yes, there is a debate about what actually happened. Mr. Chalamuniak's ability to prove what happened was hampered by
What is the uncertainty about what happened?
Well, there are two separate doctor statements that say that Mr. Chalamuniak was being treated at the time that he turned in a medical certification on August 15th. There's a disability statement by Dr.
What did the treatment consist of?
Well, that's unclear. We can't tell.
Well, didn't you ask the doctor what the treatment was?
I beg your pardon, didn't who ask?
Didn't you ask him what the treatment consisted of?
Yes, I asked a year later after I got involved and filed suit, and the question was, Mr. Who? Chalamuniak? I remember that. That's a funny name. My recollection of exactly what happened at the time is limited to what I can see in the medical records before me. And that's the problem here, Your Honors.
I don't understand you. You've got the burden of proof. If you can't establish what the treatment was, you're out of luck.
Well, except that the employer has an obligation to provide a notice of a deficiency in the medical certification at the time that it's presented. And if the employer doesn't do that, then he can't come back and argue later that the medical certification was insufficient. And that's what happened here.
What was deficient about the notice?
The deficiency in the certification papers that were presented by Mr. Chalamuniak was that they didn't include any information regarding the days of treatment on the certification itself, or at least that's the deficiency that Interstate Brands perceived. There's a separate disability form that said that Mr. Chalamuniak was being treated effective July 29th, but the certification form itself didn't provide the dates. And Interstate Brands and Tanya Gordon, both of whom were employers under the Act, didn't provide Mr. Chalamuniak with a notice of this problem and an opportunity to cure. And frankly, Your Honors, that's because the Interstate Brands made a determination to discharge Mr. Chalamuniak without regard to what his medical certification said.
Well, I thought they met with him first and established that he wasn't being treated on the 3 days that are in question.
Actually, the facts went like this, Your Honor. On August 4th, before Mr. Chalamuniak's wife had picked up the papers, Tanya Gordon determined that he should be discharged based on his attendance points. On August 11th, Mr. Chalamuniak came in and turned in his medical certification and his disability form. Ms. Gordon testified that she did not discuss with him the FMLA at that time. She didn't provide notice of any deficiency or problems with his forms. On August 15th, on a written invitation from Interstate Brands and Tanya Gordon, Mr. Chalamuniak came in and was discharged. After he was discharged, Ms. Gordon asked him if he had any information that he wanted to present that he thought might make Interstate Brands change his mind. And he said, among other things, yes, my doctor said that this absence should be covered by the FMLA. Ms. Gordon testified that she did not address the FMLA and she didn't provide any reason why his certification was insufficient. So any allegation that the determination was based on what Mr. Chalamuniak allegedly said or admitted during this meeting isn't supported by the facts. The facts support the view that the Interstate Brands and Tanya Gordon discharged Mr. Chalamuniak before they talked to him, before they took any information from him besides what was on the form. And if the problem
is... What do you think happened? What do you think? What treatment do you think he received before August 4th?
What I think, Your Honor, is that the medical records themselves are incomplete.
That is not an answer to my question.
I can't tell what treatment happened. I can tell that Mr. Chalamuniak was at Fairbanks Hospital on July 29th. He signed a form that was witnessed by a Fairbanks employee. He was there in the hospital. He wasn't at home drinking. At least he stopped long enough to go into the treatment center. What happened at that point, we can't tell now. What happened at that point, we couldn't tell in 2001 when the suit was filed.
How can you not tell?
Because memories have faded and documents have disappeared.
Your client doesn't remember? Your client's wife doesn't remember?
My client had a blackout. You can tell from the evidence that cited that 2 or 3 days disappeared for him, and he recreated what happened to him.
Aren't there hospital records?
There are some hospital records. And the hospital records that we could find indicated that he was there on July 29th, and then he was admitted as an inpatient.
But if he were treated between July 29th and August 4th, wouldn't there be a hospital record of that?
There should be, but the fact that we can't find them doesn't mean that they don't exist.
They can't find it. Does the hospital say they lose their records or what?
Did the hospital announce that they lose their records? No, Your Honor. Do documents
what does the hospital say when you ask them for the treatment record?
They provided copies of the records that they had.
Right, but isn't the natural inference that he wasn't treated between the 29th and the 4th, because if he had been, there would have been records. Right?
The problem with that natural inference...
There was a record of his visit there to sign a form on July 29th, and then there's a record of his treatment from August 4th on.
The problem
so
with...
You think the hospital just happened to lose the records between the 29th and the 4th? Pretty unlikely.
The problem with the natural inference that the court is suggesting and that the employer likes to believe is that it puts the decision about what happened, what the treatment was, what the medical condition was, in the decision of lawyers and judges and juries as opposed to the decision of doctors.
What could a jury do? How could a jury find that the hospital had lost or shredded its records of treatment of him? That's ridiculous, right?
There isn't any suggestion that their records were shredded, but it's not ridiculous
to... If a hospital treats someone, it makes a record of it. And if there is no record of treatment, the inference is there was no treatment.
I think a jury could...
entirely plausible. No, a jury would be purely speculating that there was a missing record here. He was treated without the hospital recording it.
The jury knows from experience that over time memories fade and documents disappear.
It's not a memory thing. They have records of the 29th. They have records of the 4th. What happened to the records in between the 29th and the 4th?
They may not have taken accurate records. They may not have done things.
Accurate records, so they'd have inaccurate records, right? They'd have something.
They have some inaccurate records.
If they're being treated, there would be some sort of record.
The point is that the FMLA puts the burden on the employer to establish the facts at the time that the certification is presented. That avoids these problems. To establish the facts of what really happened with regard to treatment, and this is only true, Your Honors, in the case of substance abuse, because the dates of treatment are really less of an issue in other cases.
What obligation does the employer have to go foraging for hospital records that don't exist?
No, the obligation of the employer is to put the employee on notice of the problem with the certification and give him an opportunity to solve the problem. If, as the employer is suggesting, that Mr. Chalamunik didn't actually do anything, this whole litigation would have been avoided. Mr. Chalamunik would have either admitted that's what happened, he would have gone back to his doctors.
What exactly is the deficiency in the certificate?
The deficiency in the medical certification is that they don't include the appropriate medical facts within the knowledge of the health care provider.
What is this? Where is this certification?
Your Honor, the certification is in the supplemental appendix. The separate appendix that we filed with our brief is on, I believe it's SA 44. SA 46. And so what the certification, 29 U.S.C., 2613B says is a certification shall be sufficient if it includes the date on which the serious health condition commenced, the probable cause of the condition, the appropriate medical facts.
I don't see this certificate. This is not in your brief.
It's in the separate appendix that we filed with the brief.
Okay, so what does it say?
What does the certification say?
Yeah.
The certification says that the doctor believes that Mr. Chalamunik suffered from a serious health condition under item 2, under definition 2, which on their form is absence plus treatment, which requires treatment 2 or more times by a health provider, or treatment by a health care provider on at least one occasion, which results in a regimen of treatment. It does not check category number 1, which would have been inpatient stay. And it's uncontested that there was an inpatient stay, but the problem with the form is it doesn't say if there was anything else besides that. The form doesn't specifically ask for, and the doctor doesn't specifically provide, the dates of treatment.
Why would someone looking at the form think it was inadequate? I don't understand.
Because the problem is not, in this case, unlike most of the other cases that you see reported under the FMLA and certification, the problem in this case is not a question of whether Mr. Chalamunik suffered from a serious medical condition. The problem in this case arises under 29 CFR 825.114D, which requires where the serious health condition is a substance abuse problem, that leave is available for treatment, but it's not available for absence because of the employee's use of the substance. Case law interpreting that provision is pretty sparse, but what we can tell is that if you're actually too drunk to show up to work, that's not going to count for treatment. If you're arrested for a DUI, that's not going to count for treatment. But if what happens is you're experiencing symptoms that are a result of your use of the alcohol, such as pancreatitis, that would be covered.
Counsel, I don't know where the argument about the form or the certification gets you if there is absolutely no evidence that he was receiving treatment on the days that he was absent from work. And so far you haven't mentioned any, and it's your burden, so I think unless there's something new, that you're going to lose.
Okay.
Because there isn't any evidence to support that he received treatment.
There is some evidence that he received treatment, and that is at SA 44 and SA 45. It's a disability form that was turned in at the same time as the medical certification.
That's not evidence that he was receiving treatment.
And the disability form says that he was receiving services from July 29th to August 10th. And that is evidence of treatment, Your Honor.
What treatment?
We can't tell because the employer didn't ask.
If you can't tell, then that's not evidence that he was receiving treatment.
If that's the answer, Your Honor, then what employers are encouraged to do is to not follow the regulations and try and find out the appropriate medical facts within the knowledge of the health care provider regarding the condition.
Okay, but I'm asking you to go behind that. You're going back to an argument about the form and whether the employer had a duty to make further inquiry. If that inquiry had occurred, what treatment would have been disclosed on the days that your client missed work?
We will never know. We will never be able to tell because the employer didn't comply with the regulations.
Well, then you lose. It's your burden.
It's my burden only if the requirement – you're correct, Your Honor, that it's my burden.
You have to have some evidence that he received treatment.
And I have some evidence.
You can't tell us what that is.
And I have some evidence that he received treatment. What I can't tell you is what it is, and I can't tell you that because the employer didn't provide notice and opportunity to cure at the time. If the doctors had been asked in 2000, what treatment did you give on July 29th, presumably they would have had an answer. The answer might have been, oh, you're right, that's a wrong date, and this lawsuit never would have happened.
But the undisputed evidence is that he wasn't admitted until August 4th, and that his appearance at the hospital on one of the days that he missed work was for purposes of signing a form to initiate the later inpatient treatment, but that he didn't stay. Otherwise, there would have been an admission record on that date, which there isn't. And that he otherwise, on the other days that he missed work, was making phone calls to an insurance company and back to the hospital to postpone his admission for a day, et cetera. And that's the undisputed record.
That other evidence that you just described with the phone calls and so on and so forth is the very best that Mr. Chalaman could come up with a year later.
But that's not treatment under any definition of treatment.
I understand the court has made that determination, and our argument is not so much that that's wrong, okay, that actually is treatment, that phone calls are treatment. Our argument is that by not providing notice and an opportunity to cure, Mr. Chalaman didn't have the opportunity of being able to ask his doctors to support their...
Don't doctors also keep records?
I assume doctors and lawyers and judges all keep records, and I know that mine aren't perfect, and I know that judges aren't always perfect, and I know that doctors aren't always perfect in their record-keeping requirements.
Did the doctor charge him for treatment between the 29th and the 4th?
I don't know the answer to that.
Did you try to find out?
I beg your pardon?
Did you try to find out?
I did try and find out, and I couldn't get past the insurance records at that time. They didn't have, as I recall, complete records as far as what the charges were when I was asking for them, which was in 2001 when we were filing summary judgment motions. And so the point here, and I realize I am running out of... I beg your pardon?
Is there any charge?
We didn't submit any evidence in the record about charges.
What did the doctor say?
What the doctors said when I talked to the doctors was that they didn't have any personal recollection of the events that happened.
Did you ask them whether they had a record of having treated this fellow?
And they did, and they had the documents that we put in the record, the disability form and the treatment form. And Dr. Pfeiffer indicated that, in his opinion, that meant that Mr. Chalamunyuk was at the hospital and was attempting to receive treatment as of July 29th. What he couldn't recall was any details beyond what was written down on the paperwork that we were able to find. And we weren't able to find more because the employer didn't provide notice and an opportunity to cure at the time that it happened. And either way you look at it, whether the facts are that there really was some treatment, or the facts are that there really wasn't treatment, this litigation wouldn't have happened if the employer had followed the requirements of the Act. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Nelson. Mr. Coffey?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is Randy Coffey of Fisher & Phillips, and I'm here with Ms. Paula Day from my office. The blunt fact of the matter in this case is that if Mr. Chalamoniak was not in treatment on the dates in question, then his absences were not covered by the FMLA. As the Court properly noted, Mr. Chalamoniak or the estate had the burden of proof in this case, and that burden is to set forth specific admissible evidence indicating that there's a genuine issue of material fact. The plaintiff in this case presented no evidence that he received any treatment as defined in the regulations on the dates of his absences that are at issue here, July 31, August 2, and 3. And as a result, his absences are not covered by the FMLA, and summary judgment was
proper. Well, his argument is that when you're dealing with this, you know, treatment versus just being drunk, you need a more detailed medical certificate.
Well, in regard to the medical certificate, Your Honor, the plaintiff at the district court took the position that the medical certification submitted by his doctor was complete. The district court notes that in the addendum to the plaintiff's original brief at page 41, noting that the plaintiff argued that the certification was complete. And if you look at the regulations relating to the certificate, all of the elements of a complete certificate are there: the date the condition commenced, its probable duration, and what the condition consisted of. So the problem here is that the certification...
You see, the problem is ordinarily if you just say this person has, this person had both his legs amputated or something like that, that would do it. But in the case of alcoholism, if you just say this person is an alcoholic and is completely disabled and so on, that's not enough. You have to indicate that he was treated. Right? So doesn't that have to be in the certificate?
Well, under the regulations, the certificate is complete, even though it doesn't consist of that information. And in this particular case, the certification that was submitted by Dr. Pfeiffer reflected two things. One, it had the absence plus treatment box checked, but it also noted that he was hospitalized for the acute withdrawal syndrome. And looking at the Kaufman versus Federal Express case from this court, decided by Judge or written by Judge Rovner, that type of indication in the Kaufman case was deemed to have been a complete certificate, and the employer was taken to task for not having accepted that certificate. So even if the employer here had said to the employee that the certificate was incomplete, it is clear from the medical records in this case and from the testimony in this case, all of the record below, that Mr. Chalamoniak received no treatment prior to August 4. The record is replete with evidence that the 28th of July, which was Friday night, the 29th and the 30th, which were Saturday and Sunday, that he was drinking on those days. On the 30th, he did nothing in terms of getting treatment by his own admission. On the 29th, his wife called Fairbanks, and there was this consent for disclosure form that was signed at Fairbanks Hospital, which is the form that's included in the separate appendix that the appellant submitted at SA 43. But that form does nothing other than authorize the hospital to release information to the insurance company. And Mr. Chalamoniak testified that it was his signature on the form, but he remembered absolutely nothing else about that form, and there are no medical records indicating that he received any treatment whatsoever on that date, nor is there any testimony from a doctor that he received any testimony on that date. The same thing is true for Monday, July 31st. There is nothing in the record as far as even any efforts to obtain treatment on that date. On August 1st, he called his family doctor's office, but the office was closed. On August 2nd, he called the doctor's office and spoke to someone there that he doesn't remember, who talked apparently with the doctor and said that he needed to call Fairbanks Hospital. The long and short of all of that is none of it constitutes treatment, and absent
Nelson's argument is that because he was so had such severe alcoholism, he doesn't remember much during those days, and maybe he was treated. And if the certificate had, if somehow the employer had questioned the certificate and asked the hospital and the doctor exactly what treatment Chalamoniak had received, then maybe it would have turned out that he did get some treatment.
Well, if that were true, one would have expected to find evidence of the treatment in the medical records. Dr. Kluczynski, his family doctor, the medical records from Dr. Kluczynski's office don't even have any reference to having received a phone call from Mr. Chalamoniak, and there's no evidence of him ever examining or evaluating Mr. Chalamoniak, which is required for it to constitute treatment under the regs.
What would be an example of outpatient treatment of alcoholism?
Well, I think an example, Your Honor, would be had Mr. Chalamoniak gone to his family doctor and said, I'm suffering from alcoholism and I'm having withdrawal symptoms from the alcohol, and the doctor had then prescribed some medication or course of therapy. But absent the examination and the evaluation and some medication or some course of therapy, it simply isn't treatment. And apart from Dr. Kluczynski, the family doctor's office, there are no records at Fairbanks Hospital to indicate that any treatment occurred prior to August 4th, which is the date that that Mr. Chalamoniak checked into the hospital. That is consistent with what Dr. Pfeiffer says in the affidavit that that he submitted in this case, that was submitted by Mr. Chalamoniak, in which he says, I was the treating physician for Mr. Chalamoniak at Fairbanks Hospital starting on August 4 and continuing until August 10th. There simply isn't anything else, and that's the reason why there's no evidence in the record of treatment here, is that all there were up until he checked into the hospital were attempts by Mr. Chalamoniak to make arrangements for treatment, if you accept his testimony as true that he was making all these telephone calls. But telephone calls don't constitute treatment under the regulations and under the statute. If the court has no further questions, I'll yield back the balance of my time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Coffey. Mr. Nelson, how much time does he have? 1 minute? Yeah, anything further?
The district court determined that sufficiency was not the problem here, that validity instead was the problem, and determined without very much of an examination that the word may in the regulations and the statute with regard to the second and third opinion procedures was permissive. And respectfully, may, by its language, is permissive, but what it permits is an interesting question, and it renders the regulation and the statute ambiguous and requires you to dig a little bit deeper. It could mean that the employer can grant the leave without requiring a medical certification, could grant the leave without requiring a second opinion, and in that sense it's permissive. That's consistent with what the rest of the statute and the rest of the regulations do. It could also mean that the word may is permissive in that it allows the employer to ignore the rest of the FMLA requirements and not do this. If the word may means that, then it defeats the purpose of the Act, which is to balance the interests of the employer and the employee So whether you look at this as an issue of sufficiency where it's clear that there's an obligation to provide a duty, to provide notice and an opportunity to cure, or whether you look at it as a question of validity, which provides you as an employer with an opportunity to collect additional information to clarify and authenticate a certification, or to go forth with the second or third opinion procedures, either way, it gives an employer an obligation to correct factual problems with a certification at the time that the certification is presented, to avoid years of litigation and the inability to get information that has been lost over time through faded memories or missing documents. Thank you.
I'm looking now belatedly at the certification. What is it that you think is missing here? I don't understand.
On the certification, there's no dates of treatment. There's also, for the record,
wait a second.
I beg your pardon?
Says state the approximate date the condition commenced, etc. 7/29/8/11. Yeah. And okay, that's the condition. Now, where is it that it asks about?
It doesn't ask about treatment because treatment's usually not an issue, as Your Honor pointed out.
If it doesn't ask about treatment, how can the employer be faulted?
Because the employer made the determination based on information about the dates of treatment, which wasn't on the certification. Those are appropriate facts.
The certification complies with government regulations, right?
Yes.
Well, I don't know why.
The certification, Your Honor, by the way, is also missing any statement that Mr.
Maybe the regulation should require more in an alcoholism case. But I don't see how you can impose an obligation on the employer to query a certification which complies with the regulations.
Well, there's a special additional category for substance abuse.
But apparently it's not in the regulations. Right?
Well, the form is a permissive form that you may use. It's not the form that you're required to use as an employer. And when you're making a determination based on substance abuse, presumably
are there cases or a statute or something which says that the employer may have a duty to require a different certification than the regulations require?
The statute says when a certification is complete, and a certification is complete if it includes the appropriate medical facts available to the medical provider. And if it's not complete, if it's missing those appropriate facts, which in the case of substance abuse would include the dates and manner of treatment, then the employer is under a duty to provide notice and an opportunity to cure.
Well, that's the inference you're drawing, that more is required in an alcoholism case.
It's not just an inference that I'm drawing. It's the requirement of the subsection of the regulations that makes substance abuse a special case. Nobody
but
can test
the
here.
The regulations don't connect that with the requirement for a different certification, do they?
Well, only in the sense that the regulations require that the appropriate medical facts be there, and the appropriate medical facts are going to differ from medical condition to medical condition. And in particular, where the substance abuse is the medical condition, you've got this additional requirement with regard to treatment, because you're not supposed to get medical leave if you're simply too drunk to come to work, but you are supposed to get medical leave if your absences are caused otherwise by the use of your treatment and otherwise by the use of your substance that require treatment.
So you're saying that when the employer got the certification, it should have asked Chilimoniak to specify what treatment he had received?
That's exactly right. And if Mr.
boils down to, did you make that argument in the district court?
We did.
The certification was insufficient?
We did. We briefed sufficiency from the very beginning. Our argument was, in our opinion, that the certification was sufficient, but if it wasn't, the employer was an obligation to put him on notice. And if the issue was validity, the employer was under an obligation to figure out the facts regarding treatment, because the whole point of the statute is not just to give employees an ability to sue their employer after the fact. It's to keep them in the job where they're entitled to leave. And the best person to make those arguments or to make that determination is the doctors, the medical providers that are at issue. It's so much easier for them to figure out if there was really treatment happening on these days than for us to do it now, 6 years after the fact.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
So, Mr. Coffey.